Hello, everyone, and thank you so much for tuning in today. Good morning or afternoon, depending on where you're tuning in from. I'm personally on Eastern time over in Florida. So, on today's webinar, we'll be going over farmland investing with a self-directed retirement plan. A quick disclaimer before we get started, the Intrust Group or Intrust does not provide any investment advice. We don't endorse any products. All information and materials are always for educational purposes only. Every party is always encouraged to consult with an attorney, accountant, financial advisor before entering into an investment decision. On today's agenda, we will be introducing Land Fund Partners. Thank you for coming today. Farmland 101, analyzing historical performance of farmland. Learning from Land Fund's strategy, reviewing energy and water rights, and then always, as always, at the end, we will have a Q&A to answer any questions that have come up. A little bit about me. So my name's Rachel Stolrow. I have been with the Intrust Group for almost 10 years now, so quite some time. I love to educate investors and professionals on tax-preferred retirement accounts. So very much like this. We here at the Intrust Group, we are self-directed retirement administrators or IRA administrators. We have very knowledgeable staff that is, you most of us have been doing this for quite some time now. Many hold a CISP certification. And very much like this one, we host monthly educational webinars. We are very big on education. So whether you're calling into us, speaking with us directly, or whether we're hosting a webinar, we love to provide educational content. We have over $5 billion in assets under administration, over 40 years of service. So we have been doing this for quite some time, in totaling over 24,000 active investors. And we always provide every company and client with a single point of contact. We say single, but it's really a team of two to make sure that everyone is taken care of through their self-directed retirement journey. All right. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce Chris Morris at Land Fund Partners.
Great. Thanks, Rachel. And thank you, Intrust Group, for the opportunity to share a little bit with the audience today about farmland and how it can help protect your retirement capital. My name is Chris Morris, and I'm with Land Fund Partners. Before we get started, a little bit of a disclaimer from our side. This presentation does not constitute an offer to purchase securities. Every investor needs to consult with their advisors, read the prospectus, and we will have an opportunity later if you'd like to express interest in learning more about Land Fund Partners. So, quick background. I am Chris Morris, president of Land Fund Partners. I helped start the firm back in 2013. I'm from a small town in Kentucky, grew up around farming. And really, with my business partner, John Ferris, through the Great Financial Crisis, we were studying ways that we could help high net worth investors and retirees diversify their portfolio to own U.S. row crop farmland, which can be a tremendous tool to help reduce drawdown risk and protect your purchasing power. So, if you're a farmland investor, you're in good company. Like to start with this story about Warren Buffett. So, 15-year-old Warren Buffett did not start out by picking stocks, obviously, one of the greatest equity investors of all time. But one of the first things that he invested in was farmland. So, 15-year-old Warren Buffett had saved enough money from his newspaper route and other jobs to actually acquire 40 acres of farmland in Nebraska, where he is from. So it didn't take a super experienced investor to understand that it has strong fundamentals. The fundamental value of farmland is that it is a finite asset. You can touch it, see it, it's tangible, and it grows something of value, food, fuel, and fiber for the real economy. So we think there are three primary benefits. There's certainly more, but these are the three primary benefits of farmland ownership. So the first is income. So one of the ways that you can generate income from farmland is by leasing it out to farmers. And then in return for leasing the land, you receive a rent. That can either be a crop rent, a cash rent. They're actually blended rent arrangements. But that income that you receive from farmland, those payments are extremely stable. Even in difficult economic environments, people have to eat. Our world needs the food that is coming off of a finite amount of farmland, and the yield, the income from farmland is very reliable. The second way that it can benefit investors is through appreciation of your principal of your investment. Farmland is finite and demand is increasing. There is just no way to create more farmland. And we've actually started losing farmland in the United States due to path of development and solar farms. And then if you overlay on top of that, farmland that actually has access to abundant fresh water supplies, it is decreasing. So when you look at the data of farmland real estate, the USDA actually tracks this. Has been tracking it since the year 1850. But if you just look over the last 100 years, since 1926, US row crop farmland real estate has appreciated at 4.3% annualized growth rate. So that's been very consistent over time, and there's a limited amount of farmland with increasing supply. And then the third thing, and part of the reason we want to talk to you, especially in today's environment, is true diversification. So farmland returns are non-correlated to nearly every other asset class. So what does non-correlated mean? It means that what farmland does on a return, the returns of farmland on an annual basis don't necessarily move in lockstep with other assets. Why is that important? Because you can still generate strong returns while having a different risk profile and respond to different risks in the investment world. You don't want all of your investments to move in the same direction at once, because that can lead to significant drawdowns and hurt your ability to achieve your financial goals. So you want to be truly diversified across a number of different asset classes. So given some of those factors, many of you are familiar with what's been happening with gold and silver. Farmland is often referred to as gold with a coupon. It is a real asset, it's tangible, shares a lot of those same characteristics that gold has, but it also produces annual yield through that farmland rent. You actually receive annual income, and that's why farmland is often referred to as gold with a coupon. It is actually also a great inflation hedge. So farmland has actually tracked inflation even more closely than gold over the last 50 years, because food is actually part of CPI. Food represents 14 to 15% of the CPI calculation. So there's an inherent linkage with preserving your purchasing power and hedging against inflation, much like gold. If you look at how, dig in a little more on how farmland's historical performance has done, we want to zoom in on two specific periods of time. So most of you on this webinar were investing through both of these time periods, the dot-com bust of 2000 to 2002, and also the great financial crisis of 07, 08, 09. So we really got into farmland. Again, we've been doing this since 2013, but we studied it through the great financial crisis, and we're just really impressed with how farmland was a reliable source of return, even when equities pulled back. We're not saying that we think an equity drawdown is imminent, but there's certainly a lot of similarities with the dot-com era, with what we're seeing right now as it relates to artificial intelligence build-out, valuations of stocks, valuations of private businesses. And we think that the next time there is an equity drawdown, our view is that we feel confident that US row crop will continue to perform as a steady store of value. And that's because the demand for farmland, again, is inelastic in economic terms. The demand for food on a global basis, food, fuel, and fiber, is very stable, and people have to eat regardless of whether equities are high or low. There's still heavy demand for farmland. Digging in a little bit more on historical correlations, and can certainly answer individual questions about this later or after the presentation. But you can see here, U.S. row crop farmland, it's a little small, but has generated about a 10% annual return over the last 30 years. So it's the average annual return that includes both appreciation of the farmland and the rental cash flows that come off the farm. And it's done so with much lower volatility. Volatility is on the x-axis. You compare that to the S&P 500, which has had higher annual returns over the last 30 years, but has done so with much more volatility. So when you think about having a more stable asset in your portfolio, not watching a ticker go up and down all day long, and knowing that you have a real tangible asset, farmland has been reliable over the last 30 years. Further to sort of AI proofing your portfolio, farmland has a negative correlation with both the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ, which is particularly tech heavy. So, in common, lay terms, having a negative correlation to the NASDAQ means if the NASDAQ goes down, then more than likely you would expect for farmland to be going up. Which is a positive way to hedge some of your exposure to equities in this current investment environment. So, moving on, there are different kinds of farmland. At Land Fund Partners, we focus on row crop farmland. So, row crop farmland is defined as land where you can plant crops and switch them annually. So, whether it is corn or soybeans, cotton, peanuts. If you plant a crop in 2026, then you can go in 2027 and actually plant a different commodity and switch. So those are called annual row crops. Those are different than permanent crops. Permanent crops are primarily on the West Coast. These would be establishments like vineyards, almond farms, pistachios, orchards, and these require a longer capital outlay period. As the name suggests, permanent crop. Maybe not completely permanent, but it's very hard to remove an almond tree, for example, and then switch that into pistachios the next year. Typically, when you plant that tree, it is going to stay with that one commodity. We don't do that. There are certainly experts that do invest in permanent crop farmland. It's a little more operational heavy, and we don't participate in that at Land Fund Partners. And then finally, there's also pasture land or rangeland, ranches, right? Many of you are familiar with Yellowstone, John Dutton, right? Those sorts of big farm ranches in Montana with cattle and dairy operations. There are certainly ways to monetize farmland through those endeavors, but not something that we do here at Land Fund. We focus on one particular area of the country called the Mid-South. So, the six-state region that is outlined in green on the screen. And we settled on investing in this part of the country. And there are positive attributes to many parts of the country, but we felt really confident investing here for four main reasons. So, the first is crop diversity. The second is that much of this area has a tremendous amount of groundwater. The third is the relative value. We're still able to buy land here at about half the price of Midwest farmland. So you can get to scale faster with fewer dollars. And then also local relationships. As I mentioned, I'm from Kentucky. All of our farmland investment team is from this area of the country. And a lot of farmland is local knowledge and having a good reputation and being able to find off-market investment opportunities in the area where you focus. So to touch a bit on crop diversity, people have asked us, why don't you buy land all across the United States? We actually think that we're even more diversified than simply buying row crop farmland across multiple parts of the country, because you can own land in 10 or 15 different states, but If you have the same soil types and it is just corn and soybean land, then you really aren't that diversified in terms of the crops that can be grown. In the Mid-South, where we focus, we currently own about 50,000 acres of land, roughly $400 million of assets in this area of the country. We have rice, soybeans, peanuts, sweet potatoes, cotton, grain sorghum. There's peanuts, wheat. There's a wide variety of crops that can be grown in this area of the country. So that's important because the farmer can switch the crops annually and find the most profitable option to grow on the farmland. Water is a big deal. It was a big deal when we started back in 2013, and the water situation in much of the country and even the world is even worse than it was then. So California, as an example, has depleted a lot of their irrigation wells. The farm economy there has had to really expend a lot of money on water rights. There are other aquifers in different parts of the country, but the Mid-South we think has a big advantage because of the Mississippi alluvial aquifer. There are roughly 300 years of groundwater available, and that's based on U.S. Geological Survey well data and then how deep the aquifer is. And what makes this really unique is that the Mississippi River flows right through the middle of it. So you can think of an aquifer almost like a big underground bathtub. And water can be pumped out to irrigate the farms. And then the Mississippi River annually, with its water levels going up and down, almost refills that underground bathtub. And it's a unique part of the world and a very reliable source of water. 93% of the farmland that we own is irrigated, and we think that that's really important to having a successful farmland investment. So whether it's in this region or other parts of the country, you need to make sure that you have reliable water. We have a local team, so the local relationships that we have are boots on the ground approach. You have to think about how you're going to manage your farmland investment. We do that internally. We have five members of our farm operations and farm management team who help oversee the farmers that lease the land. We typically lease out for a cash rent. We have very large farmers, up and coming younger farmers. People ask us a lot. Many of you have probably seen a Wall Street Journal article recently that really focused on the succession planning of older farmers. Farmers as a population, I think the average age is now approaching 60 years old. There are a lot of farmers that are in their 70s or even 80s, and people wonder, who's gonna handle the farm when I'm gone? And we actually provide a solution to that problem. We like to work with owner operators that are retiring because we can make them a fair offer for their farmland property, and then we lease that out to another local farmer, most usually a younger farmer who is up and coming and looking for an opportunity to expand their acres. So it's a win for the farmer that's selling. It's a win for the younger farmer that needs access to more land that we partner with. And it's also a win for our investors because we get to own a really high quality farm with a good operator. We source deals from many different places. As I mentioned, farmers, our current tenants, will bring us opportunities. Local banks who contact us and know that someone's looking to sell, estate attorneys. Many of the farms that we buy are from estates that don't necessarily have professional farm management knowledge. Maybe there's a relative that is leasing the land, but they don't really know if they're getting an appropriate market rent and not the highest and best use of that farm to necessarily stay with that family. So we're able to come in, fix the farms up. Lease them out professionally, find the right farmer, and create value for our investors that way. We're very selective with what we buy. Typically, we see in our region of the country close to $1 billion of farmland annually. We underwrite that, we check for flood history, soil type, crop history. We compare it with regional transaction data. Again, an advantage of focusing on one part of the world is that you get very familiar with it. So we can see market comparable transactions and learn a lot about what's happening in the specific market where we invest. So typically we're looking to buy 40 to 75 million of farmland a year. That ebbs and flows based on deal flow, based on the price of land and the deals that we're able to secure. One of the things that we do is buy smaller farms. So we call these bolt-on acquisitions. Again, tying in with that idea of smaller farm operators or families that maybe still own 400 or 600 acres as a legacy asset. Maybe their grandfather was a farmer, but they've moved on. We actually focus on buying those smaller farms and then building them together into bigger blocks of land. And that's really attractive to the local farmer because we're able to lease them more acreage in one spot, which is more efficient for them. They can actually spread their cost across more acres and make their operation more profitable. So the way that you farm is also important. You can buy the land, but if you don't have a farmer that's going to take care of the soil and you aren't using the right practices, then you can actually erode the soil over time. We take the exact opposite approach here at Land Fund. We focus on what's called regenerative agriculture. So we require through our lease agreements at least one regenerative practice to be done on every single farm. And why that's important is because we really think what we're doing is buying the soil. You can own the land, but if you don't take care of the earth, take care of the soil, and be a good steward of those resources, you actually have declining value over time. So you have to have a good management practice, and regenerative farming is something that we're really keen on. We've seen positive results as we've been doing this for many years now on our farm portfolio, increasing soil organic carbon, reducing water consumption, and fighting erosion. So that's the core of farmland, is owning the soil, leasing it out, and having those assets appreciate over time. Now, from an optionality perspective, there's a lot of other ways that you can generate cash flow from farmland. So those would include renewable energy options such as solar and wind, mineral rights, water rights, recreational, so hunting. We have a lot of deer and duck hunting in our part of the country. And also environmental credits are a growing revenue source for owners of farmland. Specifically, we think that water rights could be a really important play over the next 5 to 10 years. It already is very important out in the western part of the country. We see that becoming a meaningful potential source of return over the next decade or so in the mid-south. And then renewable energy is particularly interesting. These would be things like solar farms. So one example of this optionality of farmland, when we have built our investment portfolio of assets, we looked to buy really high quality farms with great soils, great farmers, high crop productivity, and diversity. We actually thought when we were buying these farms that the transmission lines, as you can see here, this is actually on the first farm that we ever bought. We thought these transmission lines were a bit of a nuisance. The farmer couldn't drive the tractor in a straight line, you sort of had to drive around it. Fast forward to today, we're starting to see solar options and solar farms become a significant potential source of return for our investors. We've actually sold one solar farm already for roughly 3 times the purchase price of the farm. And with the demand for energy that's happening from data centers, we think that solar, while it competes with farmable land, it can be quite lucrative to farmland investors. So certainly a lot more that we could dig in on farmland investing. More than happy to stay in touch with you after this presentation. If you would like to respond to the poll and hear more about what we do, then we can follow up with you. We also have an email here listed on the page, ir@landfundpartners.com. We have multiple people monitoring that inbox. And finally, if you'd like to stay in touch, we do have a newsletter. You can scan this QR code. We don't send a lot of information out too much. It's not going to be overwhelming, but once a quarter or so, you can hear what's happening in the farmland world. So with that, I will turn it back over to Rachel.
Thank you very much, Chris. All righty, let's wrap up here. So, when investing in any investment with a self-directed retirement plan, I always say it's three easy steps, and it's probably easy because I help clients do it every single day. And that's kind of the beauty of working with Intrust. But step number one, you would establish an Intrust retirement plan. Number two, you would fund your account one of three ways, through a transfer, rollover, or a contribution. And number three, you would direct us on where you wanted to purchase, wh where you wanted to funnel your money to. So, what's next here at the Intrust Group? We'll be sending you a replay. So, if you wanted to go ahead and replay this, you can do that. We also will have a March webinar, and next month we'll be doing hospitality real estate investments. So, using data to make smarter decisions. So, stay tuned for that as well. If you want any more information on self-directed retirement plans, you're always welcome to reach out to us. Like I said, we're here to answer any questions that you have. We have very knowledgeable staff, and you can also visit our website and our learning center. I would encourage you to do that as well. We have many, many great webinars and blogs that our marketing team has done a wonderful job putting up there to help educate investors. All righty, and now to the Q&A. So please drop your questions in the chat. We will do our best to answer what we can. I will read out the questions here. And all righty, here we go. So the first question is, how does UBTI work with IRAs? So some investments may have unrelated business income tax attached to the investment, usually those that are leveraging money or have short-term rentals. We aren't tax advisors, so please know that. So number one, I would ask a company that you're investing in because they would know best if it's attached to the IRA or to their investment, or ask your tax advisor. I don't know if you wanted to add to that, Chris.
Specifically, Rachel, we're also not tax advisors. Certainly want everyone to have their own counsel and advisors, but we do use a small amount of leverage in our funds at Land Fund. So there is a small amount of UBTI that is generated. I know that there are threshold amounts at which you have to report that on your tax returns, but that's more of an individual and advisor decision. There's a small amount that's generated. It doesn't necessarily disqualify the entire IRA from being tax advantaged or anything like that, but it is something to walk through with your advisors.
Absolutely. All righty. Next question here. Is rent income and interest a very similar question? So I'll skip that one. What is typically the smallest tract acre that could be considered farmland?
So there are, according to USDA data, if you have 20 acres in your backyard or 10 acres and you're growing tomatoes or, register it and make it a actual farm operation, then that could be considered a farm. In terms of maybe what Land Fund Partners does specifically, we will buy as small as 100 acres. We're actually looking at a 120-acre farm right now that joins some of our existing properties. And then the largest acquisition we've ever done was about 6,200 acres. So there's a very wide range. But the average size farm, according to the USDA, is about 400 acres. Our farmers at Land Fund typically farm around 8,000 acres on average. So much larger than your average farm operation is what we own. But we like do like to buy smaller properties because we think you can create a lot of value there.
Next question. Does your company actually own 46,000 acres? If not, please elaborate a bit more on the scope of management.
Yes, so we have a number of different investment funds. We own about 46,000 acres, just over 46,000 acres of land in this area of the country. And we actively manage all those assets.
Awesome. All right, looking to the next one. I apologize if we can just ask, there was one about regional farmland. I'm not sure I'm quite following what the question is. If you don't mind just resubmitting it, I'm happy to then read that aloud and get that answered for you. All right. Another one says, big kudos on promoting regenerative farmland. So then the next question after that. So AG gets a lot of subsidy money. Do you get that, or does the farmer, or is there a split? Seems like a
Yeah, it's a
question.
great question, and certainly something also that's in the headlines a lot. We have done a ton of research on government support payments for farmers. They've been very reliable, really, since the Dust Bowl. There have been in the 1920s and 30s. In the 30s, I believe they started to put in place support mechanisms for farmers. That has continued to present day. Bipartisan administrations have, or different administrations, I should say, have all supported farmers. And we, as the landowner, we do not participate in payments from the government. I want to be very clear on that. We would actually be disqualified because of income limitations. So the farmers that we lease the land to, they are recipients of aid, whether it's ad hoc aid. There was recently $12 billion of support that was passed through the current administration in December that should be flowing to farmers soon. There are also a number of long-term support programs. So last summer, the Big Beautiful Bill Act increased one program in particular called Price Loss Coverage, which is a really important program to understand. Essentially, it says that if the market price for a commodity falls below a set reference price, a floor almost for that price, then there's an automatic payment that is sent to farmers. And that's all done through the USDA and the FSA, Farm Service Agency. So very important programs. They're important to understand when you're thinking about making an investment in farmland. But as the landowner and as an investment company, we do not directly receive any government payments.
Thank you for that. Next question. How has the climate change affected farmlands in your area? How will the building of AI or cloud infrastructure affect farmland, specifically water usage? What is your exit strategy? And some of these, Chris, just a heads up, if it's a deeper conversation where, maybe you should be reached out to, please just shout that out and let them know that as well.
Yeah, sure. So, three great questions. Certainly can spend time individually on a call to answer those. I would say maybe just quickly running over them. So, climate, that is part of the reason long-term changes in climate or weather patterns, that's part of the reason that we invested where we did because of that groundwater aquifer system. If the world continues to get hotter, we think it's really important to have water to be able to irrigate the crops. You also have to have great drainage to then get the water off the fields. You don't want to have too much water. That can be a bad thing too. But yeah, we see climate being a longer term issue for many, many industries. Farmland is not any different, but we've tried to mitigate that a bit specifically through our strategy in this one part of the country. Our artificial intelligence data centers, those are significant, and that's become a real hot button issue in many parts of the farm community. In our region, xAI has located their two huge supercomputers that train Grok. Meta is building, I think, the largest data center in the world in northern Louisiana. And a lot of the reasoning for that is related to being able to utilize the groundwater resources. It's one of the reasons that we think there could be a water rights conversation coming down the pipe in the future, because as these large companies start to utilize water, we think that the local communities will say, hey, why aren't we receiving any compensation for this natural resource that's being utilized? So, AI and data centers are increasing energy demand and certainly an important trend in the industry. Regarding exit strategy, happy to talk specifically about that maybe in a bigger context. But we do sell farms from time to time. As I was mentioning, we've sold some to solar developers. We're in discussions for a potential battery storage facility. And there's a number of liquidity options that I'm happy to talk about maybe on a separate call.
Thank you for that. Okay, so next question is, so with farmland, how do you take an RMD in the future? So you do not need to take an RMD from your retirement plan here at the Intrust Group. So for example, if you are investing in farmland, it was time to have an RMD. We do need your proper value to have that number reflected properly, but you can always take that at another retirement plan that you may have at a different custodian.
Yeah, maybe if I can just tag along there, Rachel. So we also do in one of our funds, we have quarterly valuations, so third party appraisals and valuations. So one of the things that we provide our investors is a timely asset value for knowing how much their investment is worth at a given time.
Perfect. Perfect. And one thing I forgot to mention, which a lot of clients don't realize too, because some clients may not have another retirement plan, is you can always do what's called an in-kind RMD, which is instead of taking cash, you distribute out the asset to yourself. So either all or a portion of that investment will now be yours instead of the retirement plans, without, physically liquidating the investment. Okay, what is Land Fund Partners' history of returns for investors since 2003? Again, Chris, please, if there are some questions that may need to be handled a little bit more in detail, feel free to have a call outside of this.
Yeah, sure. I think, don't want to trip any wires for the public presentation. We have a strong track record of generating mid-teen returns. We've only been operating since 2013, not 2003. Sorry if that was unclear on one of the pages, but we have a 12, 13-year history and would be happy to share that with potential investors. We pay an annual distribution, so there's a cash component. Annually, we have some investors that choose to actually reinvest that distribution. And then the majority of the return is from the increase in farmland values over time.
Awesome. Thank you. And Chris, I'm going to keep going through questions, but what I'm going to ask you to do, if you want to go back a couple of slides and have your contact information up, just because there are so many questions, we have a ton of questions to get through and there's so many good ones. I just want to make sure perfect that anyone that may want to reach out can reach out to you as well. Okay. Going through some of the years. So what research is available to take a deeper dive into farmland investing? So whether I mean through your company or just generally, where can clients find maybe research to take a deeper dive into this subject?
Yeah, so I would refer people to our website. We have a lot of information there about different insights, articles on different types of farmland. I'll say too, like everyone else, I've used Google and some of the AI tools out there, right, to ask questions and find resources. There is information on the USDA's website that would be unbiased and provided by analysts at that government agency. So yeah, there's a lot of resources out there, and our website is certainly a good one. I'm also happy to answer questions if people have specific questions. They can email this IR@landfundpartners.com. They can also email me directly. My email is cmorris@landfundpartners.com, and happy to point them to some other resources.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Oops. Sorry, hold on one moment. I'm so sorry, my screen got stuck here for a moment. Okay, what are annual distributions to investors? That may be a question. Again, kind of a private conversation. Please feel free, investor relation at ir@landfundpartners.com to get those questions answered. What is the investment structure? What is the minimum amount? Chris, if you want to quickly touch on that, but again, we'll kind of.
So our current open fund has a $100,000 minimum investment, and we are eligible to accredited investors. With a quick Google search, you can look at what those requirements are to be defined as an accredited investor. But those are the two minimum requirements that we have: accredited investor and then a $100,000 initial investment. We do have a couple funding opportunities coming up. Our April 1st is actually almost full, so we're nearing capacity there. But if someone's interested, then we could hopefully be able to help them get invested by July 1st, but certainly depending on the timing, can have a conversation around that.
Thank you. Next one, what is the max contribution, max limit that you can contribute to your self-directed IRA per year? For 2026, it is 7,500 for anyone under 50. Over 50, there's a catch-up of $1,100. What is the investment structure and minimum amount? So we have a lot of these investment questions. Again, please do reach out to ir@landfundpartners.com. I'm sure they will be happy to get those questions answered for you.
One other thing there I'll add on the structure. So it's a limited partnership, so investors receive a K-1. So that K-1 would be sent. We typically get the K-1s done in April, so we'll not be if you have multiple private investments, we will probably not be the last one that you're waiting on.
And next question, what are the main risks? This is good. What are main risks for investors? Worst case scenario, any hold periods? Can you reinvest 1031 proceeds?
1031, no. So you cannot 1031 into a limited partnership directly. Certainly something to also consult your advisors on. But can't 1031 directly into our fund. There is something called a 721 exchange where someone can contribute farmland in a tax deferred manner. But not a lot of people that are doing that. I forget the other part of that question, Rachel.
Sorry, let me scroll back up there. I'm kind of going through all these questions. Worst case, so what are the
Risks.
main risks? What is the worst
Sure.
case scenario and hold periods?
Yeah, so our minimum hold period is 3 years. So most of our investors hold for much longer than that. You're in control of your own investment timeline a bit. We can dig into why that is. We're a semi-liquid evergreen fund. Happy to explain more and share the prospectus. Risk factors. We talked about climate, which is one of them. I would say with any private investment, you can lose money. I'll just go on the record saying that. We've had a positive track record since we started. But things happen and we could be wrong. We certainly feel really good about what we're doing. I would say one of the biggest risk factors is some of the global competitiveness, right? So I think Brazil has become a really strong agricultural country, but there's a lot of interesting dynamics around that. The geopolitics, climate, we've tried to mitigate some. I would say you have to have a diverse tenant base. We have a pretty diverse tenant base. Happy to dig in specifically on specific risks on a call or via email.
Thank you. Kind of similar, and you touched on a little bit of this in your last response. Does or can land fund partners provide a prospectus on an investment opportunity, perhaps, perhaps are located on your website. Again, the contact information down here, really great place to start, but if you want to add anything to that, Chris, you may.
Yes, we will send our prospectus to you if you reach out to us. We do not have it publicly available, but happy to do that for qualified investors.
Awesome. Thank you. Do you invest in individual farms or only farmland funds such as land fund? Not sure if you if that's the
So
clear.
we so this gets a little bit to structure too. So we own farmland. It's all owned by a limited partnership. So investors can invest in that limited partnership, which directly owns multiple different farms. Almost 50 different farms are held under one limited partnership. And then we're always looking for and adding new farmland into that same portfolio of properties. So, as an investor in the fund, you own your pro rata share of all those different properties.
Thank you. Do you provide a chain of custody? There's a couple on these structuring of the investment, such as deed information for specific farmland investing in, and does the investor take title of the fund? I think that would go to the partnership, but please do elaborate.
So before we close on any property, there's an extensive title search, diligence process, survey, clean chain of title. We get title insurance on every property that we acquire. So we, certainly have very clear chain of title. The investor doesn't get deeded the property themselves. That would be more of like a separate account situation. We don't offer that here at Land Fund Partners. So if you want the farm deeded to yourself, it would be, go buy the farm directly. What we do is we allow, hopefully a good solution for investors who do want a exposure to farmland but don't necessarily have the time or the market know-how or the management capabilities to go and buy a farm themselves and help them, get immediately diversified across almost 50 different properties.
Thank you. Next question. Have you considered adding Iowa land to your group?
We have not. One of the reasons that we focus on our part of the country is most Iowa farmland is trading in the probably 15,000, 13,000 to 20,000 range, maybe even for your top farmland. I can say right now we're under acquisition for a farm under contract to close a farm for $7,700 per acre, so pretty significant discount on a dollar basis. Iowa, I believe, not an expert there, but I think there are some rules against investment ownership by firms from outside the state as well. So think Iowa will probably be somewhere we don't go for a long time. Maybe something can change in the future, but we really know how to do what we're doing in our local region. You can't necessarily go to another part of the country and replicate it, but there are professional investors that do focus just on the Midwest.
Thank you. Does commodities pricing impact the value of your land?
By not directly, but one of the things that we think about is the farmland is an asset is ultimately worth the future cash flows that it can generate. So some investment theory there for you, but commodity prices do flow through to impact land values at some point. There are a number of different conflating factors that make it not so direct, particularly if you do a cash lease. There's also government program payments, there's crop insurance, there's a number of things that can farmers dipping into to equity on their balance sheet. There's a number of things that can not immediately correlate to commodity price changes over time. It's really interesting because a lot of people think that commodity prices are really what moves farmland values, but it's more complicated than that, in that the revenue that a farmer can make is both price times quantity. So if soybean prices stay at $11.50, forever, but if you're able to increase yield on that farm, then the total revenue can go up. So that means, just like owning one share of a company that is growing earnings, you own 1 acre of land that is growing earnings. There are also some interesting things going on with technology. So as it relates to artificial intelligence, machine learning, GPS tractors, as a farm operator becomes more profitable and more productive, that also impacts the value of land. And again, commodity prices could stay exactly the same. So there's a lot more going on, and happy to unpack that more deeply on a separate call.
Thank you. Next question. You have a lot coming your way, Chris.
Great.
What are land fund partners' biggest obstacles?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest obstacles that we face is we are extremely diligent on what new farms we will buy. So, we see about about $1 billion of land transact annually, but not all farmland is created equal. So one of the things that we really think about is only buying the best farmland. Those deals, don't always pop up. So some years we're happy to deploy less capital than we'd like. But I would say one of the biggest obstacles is simply finding more good farmland deals. But we're happy to be patient, and as long as we can continue to generate good returns for our investors, that's really what we're focused on over the long term. So I would say that's probably the biggest obstacle. As I was mentioning, we currently are starting to build a bit of an entrance queue to get into the fund. Always happy to talk to new potential investors, and then match that with really high quality deal flow.
Thank you. Can I transfer from a regular IRA to this? Hopefully, I'm understanding the question, but can you move from a typical retirement plan that may be invested in stocks, bonds, mutual funds over to a custodian like the Intrust Group to invest in farmland? Yes, you absolutely can. If I am not understanding your question, please feel free to drop it in the chat again or reach out to one of us and we'll be happy to assist. Okay, we'll answer a couple more other ones. Again, please go to ir@landfundpartners.com to get those questions answered. What kind of expenses does the fund incur?
Yeah, so the fund has management fees. So there's a management fee related to running the fund and managing the properties. We own the land, so we pay the property taxes. There's insurance on the farmland and the farmland assets, such as irrigation systems, grain bins. I mentioned property tax, insurance, repairs and maintenance. So we reinvest in repair and maintenance on drainage ditches and other things that happen on the farms. There are some capital expenses, CapEx improvements that we'll make from time to time on the properties. Some other fund expenses would be paying for auditors and paying for tax. Our auditor is Deloitte, the largest audit firm in the world, and also our taxes are done by RSM, which is a large regional tax firm. Valuation services, we pay for those. Probably some of the typical real estate expenses that you might expect. And we do have audited financials that break those down as well, if you need to see those.
Thank you. Are you pursuing and employing AG tech to increase productivity?
So we do not directly operate the farms. There are certainly a lot of ag tech investments out there. Some of our farmers have started to play around with drones and the new Combines and cotton pickers and other machinery can run upwards of $1 million. So we don't directly take an operation role. We don't directly require our farmers to use any particular ag technology, but the best farmers over time seem to be experimenting with those things and using them when appropriate.
Perfect. Okay, next question here. Describe the various funds offered. I'm not sure if that is a Chris question or an interest question. I'll kind of go first. So here at the interest group, you can invest in almost anything you'd like, any type of fund within a retirement plan. And Chris, if you wanted to touch on different funds that may be offered as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a prospectus that we can send on our Evergreen Fund. It's called LFP Soil Enrichment Fund LP. And I believe our returns from that vehicle are also posted on our website if you want to go and check that out. So that's the only current available fund that we have for self-directed IRA investors is LFP Soil Enrichment Fund, which is an evergreen farmland fund.
Awesome. Thank you. Can farmland ever be converted to a residential plot and profit distributed?
We have sold some farmland for residential lots, actually. As you can imagine, those are usually a few acres here or there, and we own close to 46,000 acres, so it doesn't move the needle a lot, but most of the communities, I'll say too, that where due to the technological impacts, we tend to see population actually declining in most of these centers that we own land. You can try to buy land around an expanding city, so call it Chicago or Nashville, where we're based. There are certainly people that do that, but it's not a primary focus of what we do at Land Fund.
Thank you. Is there any depreciation or write-offs? Maybe it's useful for non-retirement plans.
Yes, there is. We do have, the vast majority of our capital currently invested with us are taxable dollars, not IRAs. We do, work with several retirement account investors, but the majority is taxable. There is depreciation. So since we own the irrigation systems, the grain bins, those assets can be depreciated. There's also a new, not new, but an existing rule called IRC Section 180, so Internal Revenue Code Section 180, that allows you to depreciate soil nutrients that many people are utilizing. So definitely some tax benefits for those with taxable dollars that are looking to invest.
Thank you. What is the hedge for farmers unable to pay rent?
We typically do short-term leases. So there's different schools of thought around this. We at Land Fund like to do shorter-term leases, so 1 to 2 year cash rents. We typically get 50% of the rent due in March or April, and then 50% due in November at harvest. We require all of our farmers to have multi-peril crop insurance. So if there's a hailstorm or some other natural disaster that doesn't allow the crop to reach its full yield potential, and the farmer's having a difficult time paying rent, they can receive crop insurance. So we require that. I would also say that it's pretty rare that a farmer runs into issues. Part of what we do is also vet the farmers on the front end to understand their financial situation. But yes, we require all of our farmers to have crop insurance, and we can make UCC filings against the crop. So those would be things that perfect the landlord's security interest in the crop. So if someone does fall into some sort of legal proceeding, our interest as a landlord to receive that rent is highly securitized or senior in the stack of liabilities for that farmer.
Thank you. Next question for you. Have you been negatively impacted by tariffs? If so, how?
I would say that we have seen tariffs make life harder for farmers. It's been confusing. I think that may be the biggest issue for the farmers. You know, it's hard to know exactly what is happening there. I know the Supreme Court recently ruled against the tariffs that were put in place by the current administration. I know there are supposed other ways to put those in place. And does that survive past this current administration or even past November? It's hard to tell, but it certainly has made life more difficult for farmers. I'd say last year was a difficult, a harder year, particularly for small farmers that were impacted by some of those things. There have been some offsetting government program support payments to try to make them whole, but generally, I would say that tariffs would be not particularly beneficial to farmers.
Next one. What is the price per acre?
So farmland, varies widely in terms of what you can buy it for per acre. As I mentioned, one of the farms we're currently purchasing is $7,700 an acre, which is significantly lower than parts of the Midwest. So it varies a bit. I would say, giving a range, I would say we see farmland trading in our region from anywhere from, your lowest quality farmland can even go for 4,000 an acre, where your most high quality farmland, we've seen that actually trade close to $9,000 an acre. We've seen comps north of $9,000 per acre in our region.
Awesome. All righty. Next question for you. If there are any loans, do you pay them off or continue to service the loan?
So if we taking that question as if we buy a property and there are loans on the property. So it depends. Sometimes we're able to actually acquire the farm and also assume the mortgage. So, which is actually beneficial for the seller because they don't have to have a prepayment penalty when they pay off the existing mortgage. We'll do that particularly if the rents, sorry, if the interest rate is locked in at a low rate for a long time. Over the last few years, we've seen interest rates increase, which I think everyone's aware of. But if you have a loan that was issued in 2020 or 2021, it might be at a very attractive fixed low rate. So in those situations, we can actually go in and assume the existing debt on the property, depending on the bank or the lender.
Thank you. Next question. Can we specify a state and or location of investment or for an investment?
Yes, so we all the land that is owned by Soil Enrichment Fund is located in Arkansas, Mississippi, and Louisiana. So those three states currently. We do look at land in parts of Tennessee, parts of Missouri, and parts of Kentucky as well.
Them. Thank you. Next question, and again, Chris, feel free to go in depth in this on a one-on-one, but how long are your hold periods and how do you plan your exit?
So typically we are building bigger farms. We see these farms continuing to appreciate in value. So we're not necessarily looking to sell any of them today until we see further appreciation and or we see the water rights situation play out that I talked about a little bit earlier. We think that owning high quality, large farmland tracts. The demand for those is only going up in our view. And we see if we can own these for, longer, then we think that that will benefit all the investors in the fund. We will sell, as I was mentioning, we'll sell for, 2 or 3x current valuation or current purchase price because we think that the intrinsic value of these farms should actually be much higher than what we're currently buying them for. So from a value investor mindset, we want to continue to own those assets and let them play out. But if someone's willing to pay, a very high price, such as for a solar farm or a data center, we'll absolutely look at those situations as fiduciaries for our investors.
Thank you. Next question. What mistakes has your company made over the last 10 plus years? I believe, like you said, it was around 20. And oops, sorry, the question kind of fell down here.
No, that's great. Mistakes, yeah.
And well, yeah, what have you learned from them? Has this shifted or how have you shifted your fund?
Yeah, that's a great question. Certainly one of the biggest mistakes we made, which we have learned from, is our very first deal that we bought. We probably paid 5% over market value for that farm. Being a first investment, you don't know what you don't know, I think is what people say. So we paid a little bit too much money for that farm, and it took a while for that to recover, right, and get back to the returns that we would have liked it to be. So that's made us extremely disciplined on the buy. That's why we really stick to our price going in and have learned how to really understand and stick to our numbers in a negotiation. So that's a very important part of the process. Another mistake that we have made, or something that we've learned from, is we in the 2019 to 2021 time frame, we started to see a lot more competition for big farms. So we would go after large scale farms, spend a lot of time underwriting them, send our farm managers to look at them, do a lot of due diligence. And then we would make an offer for the property, call it 3,000 or 4,000 acres, and we would be 30 or 40% lower than what someone else was willing to pay. And we really had to scratch our heads and say, what is going on here? But there are just some mega funds and billionaires out there buying up those bigger tracts of farmland. So, we learned not to waste our time on those. We focus, and that allowed us to pivot and really informed a lot of our current strategy on buying the smaller farms, adding value to them, buying from local owners, and not chasing these really big deals that obviously someone with a much lower cost of capital or a much longer investment horizon or a different reason to own it, they were buying it for a lot more money than we would pay. So great market comp transactions, but we really retooled and went lower down in the market to focus on smaller deal sizes. So that was something that we learned. We've also learned how to make irrigation improvements on the farms. We've developed that skill set over the course of the last 12, 13 years. How do we increase rents? Looking at every single farm and understanding, a very clear path to creating value on that acquisition, is something that we've gotten a lot better at over the years.
Awesome. Thank you. Next question, and we're getting down to the final few here. So, is the
Great.
investment we make into a land bank as part of a farm or a fund? In addition, when do we start seeing returns? So, I know some of these are a little bit of components of questions that we have touched on as well.
Yeah, so we're a fund. Investors who invest in the fund are a limited partner. They have a capital account in the fund. Once the money is called into the fund, they're immediately participating. So if someone signs up, we don't charge any fees on committed capital. We only start charging an investment fee once your money is invested in the fund. So immediate participation as soon as you get into the fund. And no fees before that time. I think that answers the question. I think we covered some of the other of it on a previous answer.
Will the tax info be reported via a K-1 or something else? If so, when?
Yes, K-1. So limited partners receive a K-1. We typically get those distributed in April, and try to get those out to investors as soon as possible.
And then, okay, let's see. I think we have about one more left here. So, do you invest in individual farms or only farmland funds such as land fund? So I think actually we may have answered that one already. All right. We have gone through over 60 questions, Chris. So
Great.
quite a few questions. Thank you so much for hopping on here today, and thank you everyone for your participation. It has definitely been one of the most amount of questions that we have received, so you all have been great.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Rachel, and the Entrust team. Thank you all for sticking around. And in the event we didn't get to your question or you have a follow-on, feel free to reach out. We'd love to talk to you. Thanks.
All right, thanks everybody. Bye.
Bye.